And the thing that when you do this is that you become awed by how much stuff your mind keeps creating. You really get a chance. See, if you go out and walk around nature, you get a whole lot of new stimulation. But if you just stay in this little wooden room, in your cell, in your monk's cell, it's interesting because when you first go and visit a monastery and see monk cells, you say, oh, these poor monks, they live so simply. Until you get so that all you crave is a monk cell. First you create a house for yourself. The first house is full of antiques and beautiful stuff and paintings and rugs and records and hi-fi and stuff like that. And then you notice that everywhere you move, you carry all this stuff like a huge turtle on your back. And then pretty soon you notice that most of the stuff you're not using or listening to until pretty soon it gets lighter and lighter and lighter and lighter until all you really want is a little white room, see, with a mat on the floor to go in and sit down. And it blows your mind when you suddenly see how easy it could have been or can be when you're ready for it. But you can't make believe you're ready when you're not ready. Because that's as phony as anything else. If you go in and you sit in that room and all the time you're wishing you weren't in that room, you can outwish the room. You can beat the system. And what I dug in India was that I was only just so ready. That was all there was to it. That I could get just so far and then my attachments to worldly things kept catching me. I still had stuff to do in the world, and I couldn't make believe I was done because I wasn't done. So you go through your lunch and your resting and your further meditation, and then you might sing some holy songs and get yourself your emotions opened up through love and loving and loving and loving and loving and loving and loving, and just keep opening your emotions through love. And then comes asanas again, hatha yoga, and then pranayama again. And then it's 6 o'clock and you meditate a little more, and then you may make a little warm milk with some honey in it or a piece of fruit. And then you sit down and for a change you meditate. And then it's time to lie down, and you might lie down, and then around midnight you get up and do pranayama again. Since you're sleeping flat on the floor, it's not hard to keep waking up, because you keep waking up every few minutes anyway. And then at 2:30 in the morning, you start the whole trip again. Very simple, not a big drama. That's the maximum push program. The minimum push program is just to say, well, I'll just live my life, see, but I'll become... I'll watch myself live my life. That is, I'll become a witness of my own drama. Because it is true that to the extent that you can witness your own drama, your drama will change. It'll become more and more conscious. And that is called karma yoga, and just doing full-time karma yoga. There's no sense in cutting a tree unless you can cut the tree consciously. There's no reason for it at all. No reason for it. There's no reason for washing a dish unless you can wash the dish consciously. Because all you're doing is increasing the illusion. And if all of this operation here at Cumbris is running exquisitely mechanically, so everybody's doing their part, but nobody's doing it consciously, it's just like some huge machine that is just mechanically driving itself on to its own extinction. Nothing's happening at all. And it's the ability to have that center or that witness or that third thing which is constantly here until you see that all the actions you're performing all day are just actions you're performing all day, and that there is no attachment on your part to any one action over any other. If you want to examine what fatigue is, why you get tired, you'll find out you only get tired because of your own attachment. I can only get tired from sharing this stuff with you today if I care whether you hear it or not, if I'm attached to teaching you. In fact, all I can do is do what I do, what I do, what I do, and you will hear what you hear, what you hear, what you hear. Questions? Am I pushing everybody too hard? Is this too much?
Yeah, don't you like some of your passions? Isn't that part of it too? You know, that you get attached to some things and you do like them, and so you allow yourself to be attached to them? No matter what level they're at?
The statement, the requirement is, you must give it all up to have it all. Every attachment to any model at all must go in order to be able to have that thing. Say you love somebody. You're attached to somebody. You have to give up that attachment to them in order to really be with them. Because that attachment to them and the fear of losing them makes a limit to the relationship. And it's only when you can give up the attachment, so that when you and that other person are together, we're just here now. And the next moment, if that person dies or is gone, well, that's a new moment. But if I sit now, because of my attachment, a fear of losing the attachment, or losing that thing I'm attached to, or trying to hold on to it, I'm in my thoughts and then I'm not here. Buddha's point is well taken. The cause of suffering is attachment. Now that doesn't mean you have to give up stuff, you just have to give up the attachment to the stuff. You have to become so centered that whatever happens, however the cards are dealt, okay, that's how it is now. That's how it is now. And that allows you, when you're with something beautiful, to totally love it. Because it's here and now, and this is it. The next moment when it's gone, you can totally love this moment too. See, the problem is, you don't give up loving, you just broaden it out so that you love it all. That's the way the process works. It's like, I travel and then I'd feel, well, I'm going to go home now. It's an attachment to a model, I'm going home. Where are you? Well, I'm away from home. And then I started to take these really fierce scenes, like I'd be sitting in an airline terminal. And I'd say, okay, where are you? And I'd say, well, you're home. Well, now nobody makes an airline terminal home. Everybody characteristically in an airline terminal is going somewhere or coming from somewhere or working there. But they don't call it home. Unless it's birds or something like that. And I'm sitting there, okay, I'm home. What is home? Home is a state of mind where you experience certain things. Relax, here, open, I'm home. Well, I began to see that any time I thought I wasn't home, I was stuck in being less than here. So I'd be in the middle of Kansas and say, well, here I am. You know, you're in the middle of a long road that's going nowhere, coming from nowhere, and you're at marker 73. Home at last. Very far up. You go through all of your lines you use about getting home. Keep using them until you begin to see that it's either all home or forget it. Because as long as you've got a model, you're attached. You're stuck. You're stuck.
What happens when the universe stops dreaming itself? Begin.
When the universe stops dreaming itself, nothing happens. The universe stops dreaming itself. In other words, what would happen to all of this if there weren't anybody caught in the illusion? This wouldn't be, because this is the illusion. This is created by our desires. The minute your desires go, that's the end of it. People say, well, what would happen if people became enlightened? What would happen? What would happen to society, civilization? Well, that's the way it is. Interesting. Now maybe I haven't put it positively and beautifully enough. Maybe I haven't told you about how to love the Divine Mother enough. Because remember, attachments can be negative as well as positive. You can be so busy being attached to the white room that when the baby chirps or the bird sings or the nature does its thing, you say, oh, I wish it would stop. How can I meditate? That is as much attachment You have to, in the Tibetan sense, you have to embrace your 10,000 beautiful, horrible demons and the 10,000 beautiful demons as well. The things you desire, you've got to let them pass. The things you don't, that repel you, you've got to accept. You've got to say yes and that too. Right, and that too. Sure, right, that one too. The realized being says, one to me is loss and gain. One to me is fame and shame. One to me is pleasure and pain. One to me is life and death. That's a big one. Story you're all familiar with of the old monk lives up in the monastery, and the girl has a baby in the town, and that she doesn't want to tell everybody it's the fisherman, so she tells everybody it's the old monk. People go up with torches and they knock on the gates of the monastery and they hand him the baby and they say, you fathered this baby, now you bring it up. And he looks at it and he says, ah, so. And he takes the baby and he raises it, and then many years later the girl is very sick and she's afraid of dying with this lie in her conscience. So she tells everybody it was the fisherman that was the father, and they go rushing up to the monastery, and they, oh, we're terribly sorry, we've come to relieve you of the burden of rearing this child. And he looks and he says, ah, so. However it is, it is. However it is, it is. Now, at any moment, as the cards are dealt, you play the hand as beautifully as you can. You play it with total involvement, with total compassion, and in the most harmonious way you know how. But no one hand is any better than any other hand. A hand is a hand is a hand is a hand. And when you find realized beings, you're as likely to find them walking around the country, running seminars, as you're as likely to find them being a postman or a garbage collector or somebody you meet on the street that comes from who knows where and goes who knows where. Who knows where. That there's no external model and form of what holy men are like. And all, if you read the book, The Perfect Master of Maya Baba, the way he went around, The Wayfarer, about how he went around taking care of the mosques. And he would find these men who were sitting in garbage dumps. And all they were in charge of the spiritual vibrations of an entire area. And all they did was sit there all the time. And you'd come and you'd see a guy sitting in the garbage dump and you'd say, well, what could he be about? Maya Baba would rush over and he'd wash him and he'd take care of him and leave him sitting in the garbage dump because that was his thing. We keep trying to measure it all in external... Are we doing important work? Doing important work in your life? Doing something really meaningful? Whatever you do it consciously, and you are doing the optimum thing at that moment. If you walk into a grocery store and you're in such a rush to get home to meditate that when you get to the cashier's desk, you get frustrated with her because she's holding you up, and therefore you send forth a vibration of anger which makes her tighter, you've just created new karma that, boy... The game is to not create new karma and then just finish off the old karma. And you don't create new karma when you perform every act without attachment. Do what you do, but do it without attachment, and then there's no new karma created ever. I guess I don't think on dimensions like that. The word achieved has in it a continuum of wise and not wise. All I am is where I am at. I am where I am, and I am what I am. And if what I am is wise to you, groovy. I am what I am. I don't know where I am. And I don't even really care where I am. That's the thing. So I don't think about the question of the answer. I could say if I wanted to answer yes and then again no. Because obviously I'm a beginner on the path and I don't understand a great deal of stuff. And at the same time, I know much more than I ever knew before. I feel more about how it is. The less I think, the wiser I get, I notice. Which blows my mind, having been a scientist. That's really a hard one for me. That's really a hard one.
How do you compare what you're talking about with psychotherapy?
Psychotherapy is just as high as the therapist is. If you have as your therapist Buddha, the likelihood is you can become enlightened through psychotherapy. Psychotherapy is a human encounter between two beings, and any encounter between two beings will be as high as whoever the highest being is in the encounter. And to the extent that the therapist is not identified with being a therapist, the patient can get free of being a patient. To the extent that the therapist is not identified with doing good, the patient can get free of somebody to whom good has to be done. To the extent that the therapist meets the patient as, here we are human beings in the roles of doctor and patient, to that extent, everybody gets free. And recently, I went to the heroin addiction center at the Boston State Hospital for an afternoon with Danny and Bob Taylor was there too. And it blew my mind. There were 50 people in the room, of which some are heroin addicts and some are doctors and some are social workers and nurses. And it was very clear to me that the doctors were more addicted to their addiction, which was to being doctors, than the heroin addicts were even to their addiction. Because when I sat down in the room and we closed the door, as far as I'm concerned, there's 50 beings in a room and here we are, now what? And let's cut out all the crap of roles and who's going to do what, and doctors, and I'm sick, and I need help, and all that stuff. It's all melodrama, and here we are. Now, here we are. And you look at another human being and say, here we are, and they acknowledge it. And the doctors are saying, well, now, and you can't, they got these cards in their hand, and they want to hold on, because they're enjoying the power. It's an ego trip. It's just very poignant. They're busy doing good, and they got to have somebody to do good to. I think that there are people that come to see me who come in and say, I am confused. They say, I am sexually this. I am aggressive. I am this. I am that. And all I can do to maximally help them is work on myself by keeping my center. And if I can keep my center, Om Mun Ne Padme Hung, Om Mun Ne Padme Hung, Om Mun Ne Padme Hung, as fast as they say any of those things, they get free of them because they keep noticing that behind that, here we are. Person comes in and I says, I got this terrible problem and I don't know where to turn. And they, like a woman comes to see me. I may have told this last time I was here at Cumbres. A woman came to see me and she tells me her child's taking drugs and she's worked all her life for her child and now the child's run away and forged a check. And boy, she's got a really sad story. And she takes about 15 minutes to tell it. And she said, I don't know why I've come to see you, but it's a last desperate effort, right? And all the time I'm doing, Om Mun Ne Padme Hung, Om Mun Ne. And she gets all done with this whole thing, not looking at me, of course, at all during it. And then she looks, and I'm sitting right here. Now, that isn't lack of compassion. The most compassionate thing I can do for her is not get sucked into the melodrama she's just laid on me. And what I, in effect, say is, you're absolutely right, all that's true, and here we are. Now what? See? Because behind you being a mother whose daughter's run away and all that, I just met you and you're a human being, and I'm a human being. Now what'll we do from here? And within just moments after she feels the freedom that comes from that, because everybody else, she's so good at it, and it's such a poignant story, she just takes everybody with her all the time. You know, any doctor would want to help her. And what happens is immediately she starts, the smile comes in and she starts saying, Well, I was actually kind of a hellion when I was a child, too. You know that next level of the dance. And she goes through that whole level of the dance. And she's saying, and I don't know why I've come to see you. I certainly feel wonderful, but that's all silly. Terrible thing that I, you know. Same moment. Now, she can't maintain it. Within an hour after she leaves, she'll be right back in the drama. And that is a karmic problem. And you can't do anything to another human being. You can only provide the environment where if they are ready to grow, they will grow. And the whole thing of psychotherapy is what I'd call creeping professionalism, is that one human being thinks they're going to do something to another human being, which is merely a trap they are stuck in. Because it is really doctor cure thyself. That's really what the requirement is. And if I were training psychotherapists as I used to do in the old days, instead of teaching them the Kreplinian system of psychodynamic, you know, categories, and doing the MMPI and the Rorschach, I would teach them how to center and meditate. Because it's almost a universal. You want to be a better truck driver? You want to be a better therapist? You want to be a better mother? You want to be a better lawyer? You want to be a better holy man? You want to be a better dishwasher? You want to be a better thief? You want to be a better whatever your game is? Become centered. Become conscious. It's as simple as that. Right.
An
angry person who acts out. Well, I think I told a story here once when I was here about somebody who beat me up. Huh? I was a
You told me personally, but they
obviously
didn't.
Oh.
Was it Arlington Street Church?
I told it at Arlington Street Church. Well, I'll run through it very briefly to give you that. The flavor of it without the whole thing. I was invited out to Esalen to be in residence. And all this is public information, so there's no thing here. And these were around my neck, and I was playing the tambour and singing love songs to Ram. And up drives a car, and somebody's brought this raving maniac to see me, to be cured, see? And he gets out of the car and he comes menacingly towards me, and I think, wow, he's really flipped out, you know. But music must cure the savage beast, so I'm playing my tambour. And he goes and he sits behind me. And the first thing I feel is this crack in my head. Wow, that's a strange way to express love. And I'm confused and I keep playing my tambour. And then the next thing is I feel another crack on my head this way. And I, oh, wow, my brains are all shaking. Next thing is I feel a kick in my ribs. Oh, wow, man, this is just too far out, you know. Now, the first reaction I'm experiencing is confusion. Okay, because my model's been upset because this guy's a friend of mine, he and I like each other, and suddenly he's acting out aggressive, all right? In your category. He then walks around, he picks up the tambour and he throws it, all right? And I hear it land on a rock and a big hole goes into the drum, and I, oh boy, there goes the tambour, wow, man. There goes it. Imagine that. And then he picks up the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna and he throws that over the side, and I think, uh-oh, shouldn't have done that. I mean, don't screw around with me, because obviously I'm a lousy tambour player, but don't fool around with Ramakrishna. I mean, he's really something, you know. Tough baby, that's a bad thing to do. And then he gets me down and he's got my beard in one hand and he's got his thumb in my neck. He's got me so I can't talk, see? And he's got his hip in my ribs. And I'm looking at him like, oh, wow, he's too nice. All the time, my thoughts are, I'm wondering, I wonder if the beard rips off, or the whole chin rips off, or the neck breaks, or what do you suppose happens first? You know, nothing more than just like, wow, isn't this far out? See? And so then he gets up, and I stand up, and he takes these beads and he rips them. And he's holding a section about this long that had been broken, so there was a string tied in them, and he's got them in his hand, And the rest of the beads are falling off. Now, these are the beads my guru gave me, and like, the hell with everything else, man, I want those beads, see? So I'm picking up the beads, he's kicking me, and I don't care. Like, getting the beads, and I get the beads, and I take the what's left of the necklace, and I throw it into the house where he can't get at it. And he takes the other beads, and he puts them in his pocket. And these beads have disappeared, these other Buddhist beads. And then he goes and he gets in the car to leave, and he says, get me out of here. It's you against me. They've taken you over. See? And all the time I'm saying, wow, maybe they have. I'm like, sure, I'll go to your ship. Wow. Then I walk over to him and I say, hey, baby, I really want those beads. Because I see my desire. I'm attached to those beads. All 107 of them. That time. He says, you want them? And he takes them and he throws them. And then he gets out of the car and he comes at me, and I see them land in white flowers. And just as I see them white flowerness, he starts to hit me. Now, I've gone through all of my... See, I've never been beaten up since I've become a holy man. I don't know what you feel like when you get beaten up and you're a holy man. You know? And so, you know, a holy man, some holy men sit there and everybody kills them, and other holy men fight back and they're samurais. How do I know what a holy man's supposed to do? I don't have a book for it. Instructions for being beaten up when you're a holy man. You know, so I'm playing it by ear. See, I'm keeping the mantra going, and I'm like very confused because what am I supposed to do? I don't know. I'm not supposed to do anything, I guess. And it's like, wow, ooh, you know. And then I dig, I'm attached to the beads, and then I dig that the bead situation's all over, however it came out, the beads are all over. And then suddenly I feel absolutely free, and I suddenly feel this total love for him. And the minute I feel love for him, I beat the hell out of him. And I push him over, and I get him down, and I'm sitting on top of him, and I'm right on top of him, and all the time I'm whispering in his ear, I love you. This is all straight. At which point he picks me up and he sends me flying, so my head goes through a bag of rabbit food, a huge bag of rabbit food, and he gets in the car and drives away. So this all takes about 4 minutes, and I sit down and I think, wow, that's very far out, you know. And the denouement, a panel truck pulls up with some backwoods hippies from Big Sur, than which there are no more backwoodsian. They're like Ozarkian hippies, you know. They all the chicks wear long dresses and they look like they eat nails, and the guys all have their teeth missing and they wear hats pulled way down over their heads, and they're really tough, you know. They're gentle. They're like the Atlas tire ads, you know. They're tough but oh so gentle. And they come in and they find the tambora, and one of them says, hey, baby, you shouldn't treat your tambora like that. And I'm just watching this all. This is like drama. Another guy brings back the Ramakrishna book and sets it down. And then the guy says, can I work on the tambora? I said, well, it's broken. I don't care. It's all gone. He takes it away. They leave. I look for the beads. Can't find the rest of the beads. All night, these beads are lost. All night long, I'm up. All night, my beads are gone. God, what am I going to tell the guru? Well, I'll tell him a madman came out of the jungle and ripped my beads. And, you know, I'm trying to think of how to spill a story. I've blown my scene, you know. My ego's really involved. Finally, I figure out, finally, well, the beads are gone. That's the way it is. And I walk outside and walk over to white flowers, and there are the beads hanging over the white flowers. I bring them in. I lay them all out. I count 108 beads, see? 2 days later, the truck drives back, out comes the tambour, you can't even tell where it's been broken. They've, like, done it with plastic something or other in alchemical fashion, and so it's all perfect. I'm doing asanas, and I put my hand between two boards, and there are these beads. The black and blue marks go away, and I write the guy a letter, and I say, thank you, you're a great teacher. And when people said to me, why did he hit you? I say, because I wasn't pure enough. Because there was a thought form in my head, I'll play the music which will calm him down. See, I was attached. And that attachment is what he hit. If I were not attached, he wouldn't have hit me. Because that's what's called the shield of Buddha. And the shield of Buddha is your pure non-attachment. And so he was teaching me. He was very, it's a fierce teaching, but it was a teaching. And if you read Milarepa, the life of Milarepa, and you see how his teacher would say, all right, build this triangular house. And the guy would build it, and he'd say, all right, now tear it down. I decided I was drunk when I told you to build the triangular house. I want a square house. So Milarepa, months would work, and his sores in his back, and he kept saying, please enlighten me. And the guy says, as soon as you build a five-sided house, but I just built a four-sided, well, tear it all down. That was you didn't hear me right. I said five-sided. The guy says, no, you said four-sided. He says, I said five. Milarepa says, well, this time I'll have your wife as a witness. So he says, say it again. He says, build a five-sided house. So then he gets all done, and he says, I'm sure I said a six-sided house. Says, but your wife said, and the wife said, yes, you said a five-sided house. He says, shut up, woman, and what are you, questioning me and over my wife? Get away, and he throws him out. And poor guy goes through all this hell because of his attachments all the time, and the teacher is just taking them through thing after thing after thing after thing. So, it was like yesterday, a Brandeis student came to see me, and we sat looking into one another's eyes, and we went through a lot of stuff until pretty soon you could feel a tremendous amount of tension mounting in him because there were blocks and stuff like that. And finally he said, I've got to move. And he got up and he started to do the sun exercise like he was going to go through the roof, you know. You know, like very fierce, you know. And I just sat there doing Om and they fed me. Wow, dig that. I mean, unbelievable scene. He sat down. And he looked at me like, well, now that's over. And all I said was, well, maybe soon you'll learn how to transmute energy. Because what's happened is, as you and I got closer and closer, we got into a higher and higher space, and this higher space, we both got more energy. And the problem is, you don't have any way to express that energy in compassionate terms without doing a more profane take. If he were to hug me, he would feel like he was seducing me. He would feel we were entering into a homosexual contract. If he were to express something, he would feel it was an ego manifestation. He was blocked because he couldn't serve. It was like the Wesleyan student the other night I was telling you about, Saria, who spends the whole evening in the church where we get very high together, and he walks out under the stars and he looks at the stars and the spirit just inundates him, and he just comes into the spirit, and his next reaction is a feeling of embarrassment, because at the lower level of his head he can't handle this higher experience without interpreting it, I must be getting soft in the head because I know I don't believe in the spirit. And all you can do is keep centering. It's keep centering. Keep centering yourself. Because I can free the guy from being bound as long as I'm not bound in his profane take.
What would you say about movements for social change on a large scale?
Movements for social change.
You move to the United States, in which both sides are tremendously attached.
Yeah. In terms of the activist scene at the moment, it strikes me that there has been much more energy liberated in the culture than was ever available before, primarily because the culture is forcing people to come into the here and now. Television, transportation, everything forces that. And as that happens, people get more and more energy as they come into the here and now more. And they have their old models of what to do, which is external freedom models. Like if you make it externally beautiful, it'll be internally beautiful. That's an old model. And therefore, they get into doing the thing to get the external freedom harder and harder and harder with more and more energy. So that when they do that, though, they still do it in the idea of good and evil, that there is the other side, which they don't empathize with, so that it's we against them. And the minute they do a we against them, if it's the ecologists versus the polluters, if it's the blacks versus the segregationists, if it's the hippies versus the establishment, whatever it is, it's like a polarization that they get caught in. They get caught in the yin-yang of it. See? Whether it's male, female, or whatever it is, they get caught in yin and yang. And they, as a result, create the polarity more and more, because as long as they're attached to one side, they create the opposite. Now, to the extent that a person is conscious, they can make a statement for ecology by their way of living, which is ecologically harmonious, and they can make a statement to another person about ecology, which doesn't create in the other person a feeling of distance. In other words, if I see you as him, when I talk to you, all I'm creating in you is more of a feeling of isolation from me, which is forcing you to see me as him. The minute, however, I see you as us, then you and I can talk about the ecological problem, no matter who you are, whether you're the president of the worst smog-creating machine in the world. Now, my further feeling is that we are gathering in larger and larger numbers in order, it's a method for getting high, or coming into the light, like Woodstock, and gatherings, which are social political statements, but they are social political statements incidental to the fact that they get people high. Like, hundreds of thousands of people are planning to go to Toronto in July, which will be another Woodstock, it appears, to be evolving into. And it'll be for peace, and it'll be for ecology, it'll be for all good things and against all bad things, okay? The fact of the matter is that people that are gathering there to feel that experience of whatever that experience is. There is a place where we get to the point where we don't need to do that anymore, because that experience is happening inside of ourselves. And it seems to me that beings and so on, which have tremendous social political overlay, become somewhat of anachronistic. You sort of get done with them. Now, take war and peace in Vietnam. There is no doubt, it's just like Malcolm X said to Martin Luther King, we need each other. I don't question that the violence forces the hand of the administration to respect and to listen to do things. But at the same moment, if you look in Berkeley or in California now, it's very hard not to do a 1934 Germany take of the fascistic element of the police with their helmets and boots and guns and long sticks, or in Boston the other day. And you begin to see how that method of behavior change is creating very horrible side effects. Very horrible side effects. The profound model of behavior change is, just like with psychotherapy, change yourself first. Work on yourself. Because if you walk down the street and you are a loving person, a peaceful person, every act you perform with another human being increases the feeling in them of lovingness and peace. That's all there is. It's the only way it can work. And that in turn increases their loving and peacefulness, which in turn affects the next person. There's the old story, the other way it works, where you yell at somebody, he goes home and he hits his wife, who beats the kid, who kicks the dog, my father brought the tuzism, or whatever the thing is. But it's a story of the spin-off. Well, the spin-off works the other way, the same way. And the thing is, if you want to live in light, the first thing you got to do is become light. When you be light, then you live in light. If you don't be light, you don't live in light. You can't be dark and say, why aren't you giving me light? It doesn't work that way. So, I keep meeting more and more people, more and more young people especially, who tell me about they are getting despairing of the political movements. I'm even starting to meet a few blacks who are saying that now. Because they're beginning to see that they don't want what it is they get that way. And then you're beginning to see that you've got to be what it is you want to create in the universe. And it's an amazing thing how When a number of beings become a certain way, a whole process changes. I'm telling you, don't underestimate the power of the spirit. But the spirit doesn't have to be measured in numbers or in external action. The spirit has to be measured in the nature of the beings of the people. It was the nature of the beings of the people in Germany that allowed a certain process to happen. And it's the nature of the beings that we are that allow processes to happen. And when you become a different being, the whole thing around you keeps changing. I can watch a bus driver who's a beautifully centered person, and people get on his bus and they get off his bus, and just in the time they gave him the quarter and they were riding his bus, he created a vibration in them which just makes their whole thing just a little bit softer. And how many little bit softer, a little bit softer, a little bit softer before here we all are. Turns out whatever your role in life, you can do it right in the role you are. You don't have to go out and wave your hands and say, I'm for peace. You just have to be peaceful. And then that process starts to happen. And people say, well, it isn't enough. But that is the maximum thing a human being can do, is increase the degree of consciousness. Because in a conscious civilization, like war is a relatively unconscious act. Except if it's a game played among mercenaries. Then it's just a high game, like chess. For mercenaries that believe in reincarnation, war is just like any other game. It's neither good nor bad, it's just another game. Am I cutting into Tai Chi time? Yes, it's 5:03. I think we now... until is 8:00 all right?
Does it have to be sure.
Is that too early?
8:30.
You'd rather have 8:30 for some reason known only to you. All right, 8:30 we are. Huh? 8:30 is my time. 8:30 we're here. Is this, now is the structure of the evening something different than the structure now? I'd like us to do some singing and, you know, just try to open our bodies and stuff into the harmony together a little bit. But let's do it only as we feel it. Let's not phony, you know, right? If we can do it, we can do it. If we can't, we can't. So get drunk on Tai Chi, and which is outdoors now, with Master Leon, and then we'll be here at 8:30. When I was in India, I started collecting quotes, and I've been collecting books full of them. And then when I'd speak each place, give darshan, I'd always surround myself with these quotes, and I'd keep picking them up and saying, as Buddha said, as Christ said, as... And then as I started to realize that if I could just center and clear my head of having to do anything, that out would come out of me, since I was reading these all the time and living in them, would come out those thoughts. And that I didn't have to use the as Buddha said or as Christ said to have it come out. All I had to do was center and let myself just be a vehicle for stuff to come through. And then it all became more natural and more in harmony with what it was everybody needed at that moment.